south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, let's start out with a little bittersweet news here. First, I'd like to thank the government of South Korea for donating $1.6 million to build a gigantic center for undernourished children in Honduras. A very nice and thoughtful gift, you would think, right before Christmas, but here's the problem. It's had its initial inauguration and ribbon-cutting ceremony and been open about 3 months now. But unfortunately, someone, most likely the contractors for jobs like this, who are almost always connected to corrupt local politicians, are there any other kind? Well, surprise, surprise, the place has been open for 3 months now and still doesn't have electricity. And the plumbing, well, unfortunately, the water is not working either. It seems that some horse's ass of a connected plumber, I wonder who, concealed the pipe so well that no one seems to be able to find them. Not to mention, no one actually made the provisions to hire qualified personnel to run the place. What else is new? This is Latin America, you know. So there you have it. Another idiotic, pseudo-philanthropic, feel-good move by a first-world government. And what does everyone get out of a thing like that? Well, they get photo ops and champagne and gourmet meals at four-star restaurants. First-class airline flights, of course. That's what the scumbag dignitaries get anyway. And the poor? The ones that show up on Inauguration Day get a free t-shirt and a Happy Meal. Then everyone goes home, and soon enough the place deteriorates into a third-world Latin eyesore like all government projects do. Which is just another cautionary tale for all you people up north who see those TV commercials with sad, malnourished, shoeless kids with skinny bones and shacks for homes. Don't fall for it. Just be careful who you donate your money to. Better yet, if you're gonna donate, always give it to someone you actually meet in person, a person or family in need. And never, never donate to any kind of charitable organization. That's just nuts, because you're just buying Range Rovers and luxury pickups for the administrators that you'll never see because they're 2,000 miles away. And that's what they count on. Oh, and did I mention these charity NGO executives love flying first class? Doesn't everyone? If you don't believe me, you can come on down here to Latin America and see it for yourself. I'll point you in the right direction. Just go to any small, poor town out in the boonies and look for the nicest late-model pickups and SUVs and check out those international charity logos imprinted on the side. Or, better yet, as you're flying into some big off-the-gringo tourist trail Latin American city, stick your head into first class, if they let you, and ask the first couple people you meet what they do for a living. That's when you'll find out what executive charity perks are all about. That said, for all you pompous-ass charity executives out there, if you don't like what I'm saying, sue me. Or maybe you'd like to give me one of your spare pickups or SUVs. That'd be nice. Okay, enough said about that. Let's get to an email now that's very topical and pertains to anyone who wants to get their boots on the ground down here in Latin America. And this is coming from Marcos. He starts by saying, "Hey Johnny, I know I just wrote you recently about termites and the new Canadian surveillance laws, so I hope you don't mind me sharing another story with you, so here goes. Just a bit of background here. I'm one of those guys beginning to live the perpetual traveler lifestyle, at least for now, until I find a place to settle down. So far, I've been to 5 countries, Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, Nicaragua, and Costa Rica, and a number of different cities within those countries. I've flown on a few different airlines, too, without any problems. Until today, that is. Having just spent a month in the state of Quintana Roo in Mexico, I plan to fly to Costa Rica, your favorite country, to get a little more beach time. I was all set to go and even took your excellent advice and got a security wrap around my luggage at the Cancun airport. But when I got to the checkout counter, the airline attendant took an unusually long time reading the computer screen and then asked a couple of questions that are usually only asked at immigration. Like, for example, where am I headed in Costa Rica? How long do I plan to stay there? And where was I going afterwards? Then came the kicker. did I have a return ticket? I said no, I was planning to continue on to Nicaragua by bus. She pointed to her computer screen and insisted that wasn't good enough, that I needed a real return ticket. I pointed out that I'd flown to Costa Rica 2 years ago without anyone ever mentioning that to me, although I was coming in from Canada, not from Mexico like this time. So she called her supervisor, who pointed at the computer screen and backed her up 100%. Suffice it to say that I agreed to buy a return ticket right then and there and ended up in a little room upstairs in the back of the Cancun airport watching the supervisor type a ticket reservation into the computer for about 10 minutes. Eventually, I paid by credit card to complete the transaction and was given a figurative pat on the back as I walked out the door, relieved of about $500. And the Costa Rican immigration officials did ask to see that return ticket. So, Johnny, I just thought you might want to know that Costa Rica has gotten stricter on this return ticket thing. But this brings me to an even more important point. When I was back in that little room doing the credit card transaction, I was glad my credit card actually worked. Why would this be an issue? Well, I don't know if you knew this, but Canadian banks, anyway, make you tell them the exact dates and countries that you'll be using your credit cards from. And I told my bank previously that I'd be in Costa Rica as of that day, and I hadn't planned on using my credit card at all at the Mexican airport in Cancun. So since my Canadian bank wasn't expecting me in Mexico that day, my card could have been refused as I tried to buy the unexpected extra return ticket. Now, don't laugh. This type of card blocking has actually happened to me once before, when I returned home to Canada a day early and used my bank card to get some cash at the airport. My credit card and bank card were subsequently frozen because of that. So naturally, I have a lot of questions about this. But now I've come up with a kind of a plan that I'd like to share. A plan that might eliminate that airport check-in extortion racket if you're coming in on a one-way ticket. Why not have a second backup credit card from another bank, just in case? That way you can give yourself some wiggle room on your arrival and departure dates. Tell your first bank that you'll be traveling a couple days earlier than you've planned, just in case you return early like I did at that time. Then, tell your second bank that you'll be traveling a couple of days later in case you're delayed. This will give you about a 5-day window to use your credit cards in case of unexpected schedule changes without having your credit cards being blocked and without having to run around and make an inconvenient call. Which leads to the question for you, Johnny. Do you know of any international credit cards that don't keep track of you like a watchful nanny and don't want to know where you are at all times? Keep up the good work, Johnny. Signed, Marcos. Well, I say, whoa, 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 Marcos. What kind of world are we living in when we got to report every move we make to our damn bank? No way would I or any of my expat friends ever go along with that. I have some answers for you, but man, you got to dump that first world bank of yours. You know, hearing things like that, and I do hear more and more of that stuff every day, it really makes me thankful I'm down here in Latin America permanently. Why do you guys up north put up with that crap? I know, because you have to or you can't get credit or a credit card, right? Well, you know, I have a number of solutions to that problem. One, you do what a lot of smart long-term expats do. When you come down here, you get a lawyer, you open up a bank account in one of the solid banks he recommends, preferably the one he banks at. You transfer some money into that bank account. Better yet, transfer it to your lawyer's pass-through account, and then he transfers it to your new account. Then your new bank will issue you a Visa or a MasterCard or both. Once you've got an account, all banks down here will do that. After that, your worries about your bank tracking you and blocking your credit card, etc., are over. Why? Because banks down here don't ask for any traveling or credit card tracking information. Unless, of course, you want to volunteer that information, and why should you? Think of it as if you had a Visa or MasterCard back in the 1980s or 1990s when none of that Big Brother stuff was going on at all. Better yet, you don't get a credit card down here, you get a debit card. That way, you just pump it up as needed. Just tie it to a bank account of yours that has a limited amount of funds. In fact, you can open another account in your same bank and use one just to pump up your debit card and the other for everything else. Oh, and by the way, if anybody does that, if anybody cleans out your credit card, one that you've gotten down here in Latin America, As long as you've agreed to pay the credit card insurance, which they have on every credit card account down here. It's about $2 or $3 a month, by the way. No biggie. Then if there's ever an errant or fraudulent charge or big screw-up, you won't be responsible for it. Not a cent. Now, I know if you get a Visa or MasterCard up in the United States, you're not responsible for any fraudulent charges, theft, or evil doings with your credit card. And though once discovered, it might take an awful long time and a lot of phone calls and a lot of time on the internet to figure it out, you still don't have to pay for any of that stuff. Well, note that down here in Latin America, it's a bit different. Some cards are like their first world equivalents in that you're not responsible for fraudulent charges, etc., but others aren't, and you better know that when you first get the card. And the ones that aren't, you just check the box and they'll withdraw $2 or $3 a month for insurance. Now remember, these are third world banks, but you will get a Visa or a MasterCard or both, and they do work everywhere worldwide, including all ATM machines. The only difference being when you call the customer service number, you'll have to press 1 for, get this, English. What a switch, huh? But like I said, some credit cards from banks down here in Latin America don't have that nifty built-in theft insurance, so you have to pay an extra $2 or $3 a month. So do pay that. Don't elect out of it like the vast majority of Latins do and end up getting screwed in the end. In fact, I can't tell you how many Latins I've met that have been stuck for errant charges because they didn't check that box. Come on, $2 a month ain't gonna kill you, right? And here's another option. If you haven't taken that step to come down here, get a lawyer, open a bank account, etc., etc., don't worry. You can always do that later. Oh, and by the way, your lawyer will help you open a bank account in your name, or better yet, much better yet, your lawyer will help you form an SA corporation, and then the SA corporation opens the bank account. And then your new credit cards will have the corporate name on them with you as the authorized signatory, which gives you a nice buffered layer of insulation and anonymity, something you'll never get up north in a first world bank. However, if you haven't got that far yet, if you're new down here and you're just traveling in and getting your boots on the ground, what you could do is this. You go to your big brother nanny bank up north in Canada or whatever, and you'll have to do this at least a couple of weeks before your trip. And you order another Visa or MasterCard, but this time you make it a debit card. You can load it up with, let's say, $2,000 and use that as your spare for emergencies. But why even do that? Why play into the hands of those asswipe banksters? Just get yourself a nice money belt with an inside zipper and pack in about 5 or 10 folded $100 bills. $500 to $1,000 in a money belt won't even make a bulge. And you'll always be ready for any emergency. But then you might say, well, you know, you can't buy airline tickets anymore for cash. Well, guess what? You can't up in the first world, but down here in Latin America, you can walk in with a suitcase full of cash and buy out the whole place. They'll take cash. Why? Because so many Latin Americans have bad credit or are maxed out on their credit cards, therefore can only buy airline tickets and such with cash. Now, I'm talking about non-US and non-European airlines now. And down here in Latin America, travel agencies are glad to take cash too. So try that if you don't want to do it at the airport. That said, let's talk about Marco's main problem in the email. That when he's flying from Mexico, for example, to Costa Rica on a one-way ticket, if he doesn't have a return flight, they, in this case anyway, will make him fork out $500 or whatever for a return ticket. In fact, in a few past shows, I've mentioned the subject. It's actually happened to me 3 times already, but I'm prepared. Why wouldn't I be? So I'm going to give you a number of cheap and easy ways to get around this. But first, I'd like to say that it's nothing but a money-making scam for the countries and the airlines themselves. Now, you might remember quite a few shows ago when I mentioned they tried to pull that on me when I went from Costa Rica to Nicaragua and back. Through a land border, no less. And all it really was a scam to get you to buy a bus ticket at the local bus station, which was the only place to buy a ticket in that scruffy border town. And it turns out the bus company was actually owned by someone's brother-in-law in immigration. So the immigration and border guards would pick on stupid gringos with just a one-way ticket, the ones coming through on buses, of course, and scare them by saying they wouldn't let them through unless they had a return ticket, which could be bought at the local bus station 2 blocks away. How convenient, huh? Naturally, those tickets were never used. So it was really a small-time extortion scam to get money in the hand of the bus company, with a kickback to the boys in immigration. So the point is, all this scamming gringos for return tickets happened first in, guess where? Gringo-saturated Costa Rica, where the locals know gringos under stress will fork out when necessary. Now, the next time this happened to me was about a year and a half ago. I was flying from Panama to San Pedro Sula, Honduras, and when I went to the check-in counter at the Panama airport, they asked me if I had a return ticket from Honduras. And then I asked why, and she said, tourists to Latin American countries generally have a 90-day tourist visa. And, she said, we now have to make sure that they have a return ticket or a ticket out of that country so that they don't overstay their 90 days. Which, you know, really didn't make sense to me because I know if you overstay your 90 days in Latin countries, they charge you a buck or a buck and a half a day. And it's just another way for corrupt Latin bureaucracies to collect on you when you leave. In fact, I think I mentioned before that I had a friend in Mexico that overstayed his visa by, I think it was 11 years. And finally, he just couldn't take Mexico anymore. You know what it's like these days, right? And when he left, immigration gladly accepted his, I think it was $2,000 in fines. No problem, gringo. Have a fine day. Come back soon. So it seems to me there's a subtle little tug of war going on between airlines who want to piece you by getting you to buy another ticket and the government who wants to piece you by you overstaying your visa and fining you. So anyway, how did I handle that situation myself when I was sitting in the Panama airport and they tried to get me to buy a ticket? Well, I dug into my little travel pouch and I pulled out a bus ticket. I was prepared because I'd heard a few stories like this from gringos who'd been traveling before. They too got stuck paying a few $100 for a ticket they never used at the airport, again, because they couldn't produce a ticket showing that they were going to leave the country they were now entering within 90 days. Now, in my case, knowing that my final destination was going to be San Pedro Sula, Honduras, what I had done a couple of weeks before is I went online and looked up a couple of the bus companies that go from San Pedro Sula to other local Latin countries like Mexico, Belize, etc. And I purchased a bus ticket from San Pedro Sula to Belize City, Belize. Now, I wasn't going to take the bus, even though it's a nice bus, not a chicken bus, with air conditioning and restrooms on board and first-run pirated movies and such. That bus ticket was just an insurance policy. So I went online, bought a ticket for $35, and had the voucher printed out at the same internet cafe. And when the irritable lady at the Panama airport asked me for a return ticket, I handed her that voucher. She looked at it and said, fine, but when are you leaving? There's no date on here. I said, look at the bottom. It says it's an open ticket. Good for a full month. She said, fine, but you have to pick a date when you're going to leave Honduras and go to Belize. I have to put that in the system. And she did, and that was the end of it. Now, true, it cost me $35 extra, but that's a far cry from $500, right? Oh, and by the way, I'd just like to say right now that Panama has a beautiful international airport, but most of the people that work there are unhappy, abusive slugs and jerks. It's obvious they don't like their jobs, and they don't like seeing all the gringos and first world people coming through who obviously have money and even have kids with designer clothes, toting iPads and iPhones and gadgets worth at least 6 months of the average airport slug's salary. Nope, most pinheads working at the airport don't like it one bit, and they use that 10 minutes of power they have over you to screw with you. So again, all you expat wannabes and gonna-bes out there, Panama is not recommended except for a change of planes or for shopping in Cologne at the International Duty Free District where you can get some of the best shopping deals in the world. Due, of course, to the fact that a good portion of the world's goods coming from the Asian countries get offloaded, transferred, and sorted at the Panama Canal. Anyway, be aware. Certain airlines landing in certain Latin countries have found ways to nail clueless gringos who've got one-way tickets. Now, for some good news on that front. Suppose you're interested in getting your residency in a Latin American country. Let's take this example. So let's say on another trip you're in Honduras and you hook up with a lawyer there and you apply for Honduran residency. So in doing that, you'll have a piece of paper that's signed by your lawyer and the immigration department that's all sealed and stamped and says you are in the process of applying for residency. And that your application is in trámite. That's trámite. That means it's in progress. Now, in Latin America, depending on what country you're in, it could take 3 months, 6 months, a year, or if you have a really bad lawyer, forever. Anyway, once you've got that piece of paper in your hand that says you've applied, you get that right away. So then you have one copy certified by your lawyer and you carry that thing with you. And you produce that if you're at an airline counter with a one-way ticket and you're home free. Now remember, you don't have your residency yet, you just have applied for it. But that's good enough. You're saved. You won't need a return ticket because you're going to become a resident in a Latin country. And if that bureaucrat gets more belligerent and says, well, then why aren't you in that country right now? Well, you can inform the jerk that it's not necessary for you to be in that country until the final stages. But believe me, it's unlikely they're going to ask you anything as complicated as that once they see that paperwork. And while we're on the topic of gringos getting residency down here in Latin America, do note that I get a lot of emails on the subject. More and more people are thinking about it. And if you intend to get residency in a Latin American country, it really is a very wise move to make while you still can. As you know, it's not getting any easier. What's so nice about it is that it does, in a few years, lead to a passport and citizenship. And of course, a second passport is kind of like having a brand new spare tire for your car or a reserve tank if you're flying an airplane. Very nice, comforting things to have in case of emergency. Not to mention, for some people, it's essential to have that second passport in the event you're thinking about giving up your U.S. citizenship. I'm sure you've been reading about that. It's been all over the news lately. Especially with people who have a lot of money. With them, it's become quite popular to renounce. You know, a U.S. passport's not what it used to be. Now it's more like a lead weight around your neck. Anyway, you'll find if you come down to my expat wisdom seminar in January 2015, we dissect that subject very thoroughly. In fact, we spend quite a few hours on passports and residency, as well as banking, SA corporations, trusts, LLCs, business startups, IT, partnerships. The way it is right now, the way expats living down here are utilizing that stuff. So come on down and see how expats really live and do business down here. Get it from the horse's mouth and meet the short and long-term expats yourself. Just go to www.expatwisdom.com, click on the seminar link for all the information. We're more than half filled now, so don't wait too long and miss the boat. Now, in regards to that email I just read, one of our longtime listeners, Alex, who's been looking heavily at Argentina, he just sent me a link that proves Argentina's pulling the very same border control thing. And what they're doing is even more disturbing. It's all about that 90-day tourist visa thing, too, meaning residency is looking better all the time. That way, you eliminate the visa border problems anyway. And I'll paraphrase this article that just came out last week. This is from the Argentina Independent, and the title is Government Tightens Border Controls for, quote, False Tourists, unquote. It starts by saying, the Immigration Department of Argentina has established a new border control to determine whether foreign citizens who enter Argentina should really be classified as tourists or not. Additional controls will be applied to people suspected of being, quote, false tourists, unquote. That is, those seeking the standard 3 months tourist visa, but entering the country for reasons other than the defined criteria of, quote, rest and recreation tourism, unquote. In case of any doubts regarding the purpose of stay of incoming foreigners, that would be you, not me, because I like to keep out of Argentina. Immigration officials at all entry points into Argentina will be able now to demand further information and supporting documentation regarding a person's, number one, place of permanent residency, number two, estimated time staying in Argentina, number three, a list of the places the incoming person will visit, four, how will that person be traveling to these places? 5. A list of any friends, relatives, or acquaintances living in Argentina. Then it goes on to say, your supporting documentation will include 1. Air tickets, 2. Credit cards, 3. Domestic or international transport tickets, 4. Your hotel bookings, or any other evidence immigration officers may consider necessary to your case. Then it goes on to say, those foreign citizens, that would be you, who have remained in Argentina for long periods of time, which could indicate they do not live in the country they actually have declared as their place of permanent residency, will also be targeted by these new rules. If a person entering the country is found to be a, quote, false tourist, unquote, they will be rejected at the border. These new measures come in the midst of a debate regarding the links between immigration and crime, with the government pushing a reform of the Criminal Procedure Code, which will allow the authorities to expel any and all foreign citizens who are caught committing a crime. Okay, then, so what does all that mean? It means I'm not going to Argentina anytime soon. Come on, doesn't that sound a bit like Cold War East German Stasi tactics? And Doug Casey and all his buddies who live in that very upscale private development in the Northwest with the golf course, the spas, and the vineyards and all that. Well, years ago I was a bit jealous, but now I feel sorry for those guys. I just wonder what his VIP, VIP visitors, are going to do when they get called out on the border and they have to produce list after list of names and numbers and flights and routes, etc., etc. I mean, come on, what a nightmare. And if you live there, you're going to have a lot of friends eventually. You think they're going to be happy about you naming them on government lists? Whoops, there goes yours and everyone else's anonymity. Even someone with George Bush Jr.'s IQ could tell you that Argentina is a place for a vacation, but no place to live the expat life. And you know, the real point of this border crackdown on tourists is not because of tourists committing violent crimes. Come on. It's really about cracking down on so-called financial crimes. Because, you know, Argentina's got currency controls. There are tough limits on dollar deposits, withdrawals, and transfers. And those currency controls have caused heavy distortions in the economy, pushing Argentina to the edge of bankruptcy. Again. And note, when tourists come in and out of the country, you think they're bringing pesos in and out? Nope. Dollars. So, it's not hard to figure out why they're tightening up on tourists coming in and out of the borders. So, just note that Big Brother has truly arrived in Argentina. And also note that when people like Doug Casey say, "Don't worry about all those rules and regs, Argentina's a chaotic Latin country." Well, that may be true, but remember, every gringo and expat has to cross the border to get there now, doesn't he? Yep, it's a huge country and you can get lost in it. But when you're standing in line at airport, immigration, and customs, they got you. So again, if you've truly chosen Argentina as your expat haven, the only way to foil that border problem is to get residency there. Otherwise, every 3 months or so, you'll be facing a Spanish Inquisition. But thankfully, since this is Latin America, there will be some lawyers and border guards who will take 50 or 100 bucks and look the other way, if you know what I mean. But you know, it's going to have to be U.S. dollars, not Argentine pesos.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.